Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the CORE MPO Technical Coordinating Committee meeting on June 20th, 2024. We will go ahead and get started with the approval of the agenda. Are there any comments or additions to the current agenda? Great. Can I get a motion to accept the agenda for today?
Is that better?
Yes.
So moved, Nathan Clark, City of Richmond Hill.
Thank you.
Second. I'll second, Kayla Brown, Bike Walk Savannah.
Also, moved and seconded. We'll start with voting to my left. Please state your name and your vote.
Omar Sanadi, City of Paul Winford, yay.
Kanisati, G.Dot Planning, yes.
Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah, yes.
Kayla Brown, yes.
Mary Moskowitz, yes.
Nathan Clark, yes.
Heath Mains, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes. All right, we'll go on to our first action item, approval of the April 18th MPO TCC meeting minutes. Can I get a motion?
Moskowitz motion to approve. Brown second.
All right, we'll start the vote to the right.
Means yes.
Clark yes.
Moskowitz yes. Brown yes.
Strickland yes. Kanisati, G.Dot Planning yes.
Omar Sanati yes.
Deanna Brooks yes. One more minutes to approve the April 15th CORE MPO TCC special called meeting minutes. If we can go ahead and get those approved. Can I get a motion? Are there any comments?
I make a motion to approve.
Brown second.
All right, we'll start the vote to the right.
Means yes.
Clark, yes.
Moskowitz, yes. Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes. Kanisati, yes.
Omar Sanat, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes. All right. Now we will move into the fiscal year 2024-2027 TIP amendments for June 2024.
All right. Good afternoon. I will be giving that TIP report. Okay. So in April and May of this year, we received TIP amendment requests from Chatham Area Transit and the Georgia Department of Transportation. And so I'll just go through what those amendments are through this report. So in terms of the public participation process, the public comment period started on June 12th. So far, we have not received public comment, and it'll close on June 26th. With the public hearing advertised for the CORE MPO board. In terms of the specific amendments, we have six, and that's because we are about to end fiscal year 2024. So this is a pretty heavy TIP amendment. And so we have four from CAT and two from GDOT. So we have a ferry dock rehab in fiscal year 2025, adding a ferry replacement in fiscal year 2025, increasing the cost estimate under preventative maintenance for fiscal year 2025, increasing the cost estimate for operating assistance in fiscal year 2025, and then for GDOT, we're adding a right-of-way phase to fiscal year 2025 with Y-800 funds and moving the construction phase from fiscal year 2025 to fiscal year 2026. And then for SR-26/US-80 Lazaretto Creek, we are moving the construction phase from fiscal year 2025 to fiscal year 2028 and moving the right-of-way phase from fiscal year 2024 to fiscal year 2026 with a cost increase. So I'll go into more detail. So this is for the ferry dock rehab, and here's the specific amendment. So there The construction phase will be programmed with flex funds, with the federal portion of that being over $300,000 and the local portion being over $90,000. And for the FHWA FBP ferry replacement, there will be multiple federal funds for this being added to the TIP in the transit section. So we have flex funds, FUD funds, GDOT Transit Trust, to name a few of those funds, and then also an additional local match is being added as well. And we'll show those in the table later in the document. This is the TIP amendment for the CAT Section 5307 funding change for preventative maintenance. And so we are adding more funds to fiscal year 2025 for preventative maintenance. And then for Section 5307 funding change for operating assistance, the change will also be in fiscal year 2025 with an increase in local funding in fiscal year 2025. Moving on to GDOT's projects, the SR 404 spur slash US 17. With this TIP amendment, again, we are adding funds in the right-of-way phase for fiscal year 2025. And then we are also adding funds in the construction phase for fiscal year 2026. And then for the SR26/US80 at Lazaretto Creek, we're adding funds to fiscal year 2028. So the construction phase will be moving out of the FY 2024 to FY 2027 TIP into a later TIP. And then we're also going to be adding in the right-of-way phase Y240 funds in fiscal year 2026. So moving on to the appendix section, these are the updated funding tables for that. And we actually had some questions on that, especially in terms of locating a project ID for some of the projects. There was one project in particular, I think it was the ferry boat replacement, where we couldn't locate a project ID for it, but I think it needs a project ID. Is that correct, Mary?
Yes, because these are ferry federal funds, so they are, FHWA funds, so they need a PI number associated with those.
Okay. So we have a PI number for the ferry boat maintenance, but not for replacement. So I wasn't able to locate that PI number, but I might be mistaken in where I'm looking for it. Does anyone know more about finding that PI number or how PI numbers are assigned to projects? We'll keep working on that and try to still locate that PI number. And then these are just the updated tables for that. So funding added to fiscal year 2025, and that total price is changing to over $42 million. For SR 404 spur, this is the original project page, and this is the updated project page. So you see the funds added in fiscal year 2025 and fiscal year 2026. And then Lazaretto Creek, original project page, and then the updated project page. So we see the funding removed from fiscal year 2025, and then we have funding added in fiscal year 2026. And then these are the rest of the appendix. So these projects are consistent with the Metropolitan Transportation Plan, the 2045 plan. And then this is just the correspondence on those TIP amendments. And then we also checked to see the status of projects that are in programmed in fiscal year 2024 to ensure that all those funds were programmed so they wouldn't lapse. And so it seems all of them are programmed or they got moved to another year, but we couldn't find the status of a couple of them, but like for Ivy and Linwood sidewalks project, but we found out that that project was canceled. And then also for Green Island Road Trail, the GDOT PI document was outdated for that.
What was the issue? Oh, I'm sorry. What do you mean the G.PI is outdated?
Oh, the G.PI page was outdated, but I think this one is correct though, right?
Yeah.
There was an amendment for this one?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So we can update that in the subsequent report. And then this is just the resolution. Are there any questions on that, on the TIP amendment report? I'll scroll back down to this too.
The PM of the G.PM is working with the engineering services to update the information in TIPRO so that the fund would be authorized within that time frame, June 2024.
Okay. And I have a question about the ferry maintenance and ferry replacements. So are those two totally new projects, or are they existing projects?
They're existing projects. So the ferry maintenance is new. We just have additional funds added to it. And then the ferry replacement was funded. It's got multiple funding sources to
okay.
it. So that's why we needed the update.
Okay.
So it's an existing project in the TIP, but a new funding source has been added to
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. With that, we are asking for an endorsement of the June TIP amendments.
I'll make the motion.
Second, Strickland.
I'll spend a motion and second in to endorse the June 2024 TIP amendments. Can we start the vote to the right?
Mains, yes.
Clark, yes.
Moskowitz, yes. Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Kanisati, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Omasanadi, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes. Thank you, Asia.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the approval of the draft financially constrained 2050 MTP project list.
Good afternoon. I think we will have a lot of discussion on this one. We had a special call meeting in May. At that time, we developed the scoring. And then we did ask the TCC members to give us any feedback about the scoring. We didn't receive any feedback. So it seems like everybody's okay with the project, the rankings. So this is the second page actually shows the final scores and the project. So we decided to just go with this ranking to populate our 2050 MTP. This is what I did. If you want to see the financial plan development process, it's already documented in the financial plan. And then also the appendix has more information about all this, including the TIP adjustments that Asia just presented to you, already included how we derive the final revenues. So but anyway, I would just move on with this project. We updated all the revenues. So there was a little bit of change because of the amendments and also the two grant funds for the GPA. This revenue is still not finalized yet because those two projects, I contacted the Federal Highway Administration. They were saying the award funds is only the federal portion. So the GPA needs to provide a 20% match and an over match. So the total project cost might be $30 million, but we need to contact the GPA for that additional local match, but I haven't got that yet. So whatever I included over here, it's just the 80% federal and the 20% local match. But that doesn't impact other projects. So we allocated the revenues into the categories. And then specific projects I mentioned, we have $424 million in cost band one and $456 million in cost band two and $548 million in cost band three. That's for specific projects. Operational improvement project, we have 12%. So if say Chatham County or say Savannah wants to do an operational improvement roundabout or interchange or intersections or signal coordination, we can say that that project is consistent. So when we do the call for projects, you can apply for that project and we can see it's consistent because it's consistent with operational improvement. So we actually allocated more for operational improvements at this round, because for the 2045, we use 7%. For this round, we use 12%. So we actually have more revenues for the operational improvements. Now, motorized set aside, we decided to use like 3% mode share, and that is more than what we had for 2045. Transit projects, we also have more funds, and because that's we assume the $1.3 million for electric buses. So let's focus on the specific highway projects. So out of this 424 projects, a lot of those projects already come with their own revenue, so we just need to identify the additional projects to be added in. And we decided revenue as we use annual inflation rate of 2% and cost estimating, we use the 4%. So we're not going to include any projects in the 2045 that already implemented. So you can see the I-16 widening, the important ones, we have the US 17 bridges at the Savannah River and Middle River, Tourmaline Park Trail, the Lesseps Avenue and I-16 S-307 is already open, and Effingham Parkway is under construction, and Ogeechee Road widening is also under construction, Brampton Road under construction. So we're not going to include any of those projects. And then the remaining projects in the 2045 will be carried forward to the 2050 because they're already in the pipeline. Those include the three project drain projects, the Boulevard option and East Drain Avenue improvements, and then West Drain Avenue improvements, and also the Back River Bridge, and then the US 17 widening, those related projects, just in the downtown area. And then remember, we amended 2045 MTP to include the right-of-way phase for the US 17 and the Savannah River crossing. That's $500,000 only for right-of-way phase. And then we are also carrying forward the I-95 and ITS project from Florida State Line to South Carolina. And then they also carry forward a state-of-the-art US 80 bridges replacement at Bull River and Lestrade Creek because they're already in the pipeline. And then I-16 at Lishinaka Road interchange. And then the Airways Avenue because we already have the scoping phase for those. So these projects are already included in the 2045 plan, and they're already in the pipeline, and they already have funds program. So they will carry forward to the 2050 plan. And then the rest of the projects that we just added in, three Effingham County projects. We checked Bryan County. No projects in the STIP are located within the Corn PO boundary, but three Effingham County projects are located. Those are bridge replacement and a bridge rehab project. One is Stillwell Road at Urbanisa Creek, and another one is Long Bridge at Urbanisa Creek, and then I-95 at Savannah River, so that one. And those are the three FEM kind of projects. And then we also have four projects that we will include in. So those would be the project that just received the grant funds. One of them is I-16 exit ramp removal. City of Savannah got $1.8 million with the match is about $2.25 million. And then these two projects, I do need to contact the project manager to find out their overmatch because FHW refused to share the original application. So I really don't know what the total cost is. So what I'm including over here is just the federal award and then 20% match. But we will contact the GPA and this private company to see what their actual cost might be. So that's for electric charging, and then Port of Savannah, also the renewable fuel project. And then another one, GDOT actually proposed a TIP amendment, but we cannot process the MTP until we cannot process TIP amendment until we include this into the TIP. So this project is a NAVI charging. So basically between Chatham Parkway and I-16, between Chatham Parkway and Gwinnett Street, there will be a charging station. So we will include this project into 2050 and then immediately, probably in August, and we can process the TIP amendments actually for all four projects over here listed. And then the longer range projects, in the 2045, and then remember that big matrix, that's coming from the travel demand model or coastal empire study and freight planning. So we have the big matrix that we compiled. We have about 180 projects and we compile that. And then And then we decided that we will select the 30 projects for prioritization. This is where I shared with you on May the 15th, the prioritization. So for those additional projects, what I did is I'm just going to plug in the project based on the priority ranking. So remember, we had that, let me just go back to that one. Oh, no, not this. Okay. So for example, the top one, State Route 21 widening, between 30, State Route 30 and the McCall Road. And then the second one is State Route 21 widening between McCall Road and 9th Street in Rincon. So when I plug in the numbers in the 2050 plan, I just follow this order. So I plug in the State Route 21 widening first. And then if it still have revenue balance, I move on to the next project. So that's how I did the financial plan development. And also for the cost estimate, I referenced to several projects because the original project, State Route 21 widening, coming from the Coastal Empire study, it has a cost about $68 million. And then that's including, because we are dividing the longer segments into smaller segments. So that $68 million is for State Route 30 all the way to 9th Street in Rincon. So what we did is we just assume the cost will be by percentage. So like 30 from 37 to McCall Road might be like 50% of the cost or something. So that's what we used. We also Genesis also used the cost estimating tool to do the project estimate. But my question with that cost estimating tool is doesn't include right of way cost. So for the first project, it gave me $19 million. I just don't think that work. $19 million. I just don't think it work. So in those situations, I checked several different resources. So I always pick the higher number. So if it's coming from the Coast Empire study, it's a $68 million. And so I can divide it up into different segments. So I'm not going to use like $19 million because that one doesn't include right of way. So that's the reasoning for, how to do the cost estimating. So basically they are coming from either freight plans or Coast Empire. So I did document all of that, into the project list that I sent you. For the cost band one projects, I feel pretty comfortable with these, because like, any project with a PI number, if they have a construction phase, they have a right-of-way phase in the TIP. So we use the TIP number. And then, for the project that doesn't have a construction phase, for example, Project Drain, we have three projects for Project Drain. I contact GDOT project manager. So the cost over here for this 8358-10236 and 8359, I checked the TPRO first. The TPRO numbers are a little bit higher than these numbers, but these are the numbers that are provided to me by the GDOT project manager. So I decided to use the GDOT project manager provided numbers. And then for the I-95 Airways Avenue, I need to get this information from the airport commission, because when we included the project into the 2025 plan, we assumed $30 million. So I adjusted that into $36 million. But now, I mean, the eventual cost will depend on the final concept, because right now that project is going through the scoping phase. So we really don't know which concept we would choose from. So what I did is just adjust the original $30 million from 2045 to $36 million. Because the 2045 was using 3.5% for annual inflation rate. But for 2050, we're using 4% annual inflation rate. So I inflate that into 2028. So for cost band one projects, if it's in the TIP age, in the TIP years, no inflation. But if it's in 2020, for later years, like 2028 to 2032, so I'm inflate that into 2028. But I need to check with GPA, or not GPA, Savannah Airport Commission on this project. So I'm not sure about what concept you're going to choose and what the final cost would be. But right now I'm just using the 2025 number and adjust it. And then you see the exit ramp removal and then the two GPA project and then the NEVI project. And I feel very comfortable with those numbers because those numbers are directly from the ward, and when we will contact the project manager later for the specific. And then what I did for those, I just followed the project ranking order. So you see the first one would be Stereo 21 widening. So from Stereo 30 to McCall Road. So I used that $65 million as the basis. So you can actually see on the right on this one, base cost from, the cost estimating tool gave me $65 million for that big segment. But the Coastal Empire study was $68 million. It wasn't that much difference. So I used the cost estimating tool, but to divide the segments up and adjust 228 for cost band one. So there was inflation factor for that. And then just to follow this. So if I see, I plug in the PEE for the first project, I was able to plug in the PE and the construction. And then there was still a balance for other projects, the PE, something like that. So until I exhaust the balance in cost band one, and then I start to allocate the funds in cost band two. For cost band two, we are using 1.6 as the inflation factor because we are adjusting to 2037. And then in cost band three, we are using 2.28. That's the inflation factor based on the 2025 as the base year. That's one. And then you do the inflation factor, annual inflation rate, 4%. And eventually I got to this project list. And then I already received, so we have two Stereo 21 widening project and Stereo 204 or Fort Argyle Road widening. And then we have US 80 widening, that's in Effingham County and Gulfstream widening. Gulfstream widening was ranked, not very high in the 2045, but because we are using resiliency and equity as well. So this project is ranked pretty high. So we added this project, and then I-516 Lions Parkway widening, and then I-516 and I-16 interchange reconstruction, and then I-516 widening from Veterans Parkway to Mildred, and I-95 auxiliary lanes. This one, actually, I used the vision plan as the basis, so this one is very costly. It's like $363 million. And then 307 grade separation, and at the Stereo 21, and the I-95 interchange reconstruction at Stereo 21. So this is the preliminary list. I sent you this list on Monday, and I got a response from Michelle. Michelle was asking why President Street is not on the list. So I indicated, this is just a preliminary list. And this is just purely based on the prioritization that we saw based on that. But that prioritization result doesn't consider local support, local and state support. So for example, if the I-95 widening is not needed now and the GDOT doesn't want to pursue it, and then the local like Chatham County doesn't want to support it, we can remove it. But if you like Chatham County wants to proceed with President Street, and you have local match, you have the local support, you want to start a project, that will be a priority. So during the prioritization, we do have, As you can see in this prioritization, you see we have the needs screen, and then we also have the sustainability equity, and the third screen is equity, but I do have other considerations, additional considerations. So local priority is definitely a consideration. And then if it's consistent with 2045, a lot of these are consistent, or if you have alternative funding sources, I mean, you can come with your own revenue. That's another consideration. And also project phase, you have already started. Like I-95 at Aries Avenue, it was actually ranked not very high, but it's already in the pipeline. So it's already started PE phase. So we added in. So this is just to give you the first preliminary project list, so to trick your thinking. So I mean, if you see this project, I mean, we can adjust this, but anything above the stable 21 widening, don't touch those because those are already in the pipeline or they already have funds allocated to them. So don't touch those. But the list below, like this three I-516 project, I-516 widening and interchange, and I-516 widening. So these are pretty consistent with 2045, and I-95 at State Route 21 interchange is pretty consistent with 2045 as well. Gulfstream is also pretty consistent with 2045, but if you see this project list that shouldn't be here, and we can make the adjustment, and then when we present to the Core MPO board next week, we will have like revised the list. And then we will ask the Core MPO board to basically adopt the draft project list, and we will go to the public for the 30-day public comment period. During that time, Pooler might have some project that they want to add in, and then we can probably just trade. I mean the thing is you gotta have a local support. So if you don't have local support or GDOT doesn't want to start a project, it will never get rebuilt. So we would rather start with, even if we have the prioritization process, but there should be additional considerations. So do you see any of these projects that make sense or don't make sense? Let us know which one you want to add or which one you want to remove.
I know my boss, Jim, wanted to talk to you. I don't know if he ever got a hold of you or not, but the Gulfstream widening project, I think that's one the airport is up in the air about whether that's feasible or not with some of the projects that we have going on that's coming up in the next couple of months. So.
Okay. Yeah. Airport, I think the George Fiddler was one who requested to add the Gulfstream Road in the 2045 MTP. But if you don't think it's no longer feasible, and we can remove it. Yeah. Another one I don't see feasible might be the I-95 widening. I mean, is you're not going to do the I-95 widening? It just, even if it's ranked high, but I just don't see, it's the I-95 needs widening now.
Okay. I will reach out with the upper management and talk to them, and I will let you know, circle back to you.
Yeah.
And we are reviewing the these tables with the financial development section 6 we received. Currently, we are reviewing the financial constraint plan. And after that, we will send our comments soon.
Okay. And then another project that I have a question is I-516 at I-16 interchange reconstruction. I know because part of the I-16 widening project includes some improvements over there already, right? So do we need this one? I know it's higher priority and it's also consistent with 2045 MTP, but since we're already making some improvements over there, so I'm just wondering whether this interchange reconstruction, I would like to say that I-620 include this interchange reconstruction, but unfortunately it didn't, but it is making some improvements. So we need to know. Yeah. So please check the I-95 and I-516. City of Savannah, you want to do the President Street?
So just looking at the scoring, mm-hmm. I would ask that it be rescored. So it only got a single point for high truck volumes, but we know from the ongoing President Street corridor study that there are more than 15,000 tractor trailers on that section now. And so I feel like
you think of the scoring that we did over here doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't reflect that.
Okay, it doesn't reflect that. Okay.
And connecting population centers to activity centers, I would maintain that Tybee Island's an activity center, I would think. Folks who are here staying in downtown use President Street to go out to the islands. CAT has a route that runs on President Street and it didn't get any points for transit. And I know Deanna in our corridor study meetings, they are including bike and peg connectivity.
Yeah.
In that. And so I think if it were to be rescored in that light.
Okay. We would revisit the scoring.
Then.
Yeah.
I think it would, and I would argue that when the train's there, it's level of service F.
Yeah. Plus we already have a study.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So I think that if it were rescored, the level of service based on why we're doing the corridors or the county, thank you very much, mm-hmm. is doing the corridor study and included the fact that we do have those freight volumes that folks use it to get out to and from Tybee. There's a cat route and they're including bike and ped. It would add like 40 or 48 points.
Oh, okay.
Which would make a huge difference in the scoring, in the ranking.
Yeah. And I definitely say we have local support for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely have. Yeah. So even if we don't re-rank just because of the local support. So after the study is done, you might start like PE phase or scoping phase. So just because of that, we might include this project. Yeah.
Yeah. I would respectfully ask that it be rescored and put in the correct rank. And then, but yeah, I think there is local support for it.
Okay.
Based on the number of complaints that we get and y'all get, the phone calls that City Hall gets.
What are the projects in this list? Because we selected about 30 projects in this prioritization ranking. What other projects do you see that need to be like boosted besides that?
I think just looking at like the freight considerations for Old River Road, especially with the development center being located
okay,
there.
Okay, Old River Road.
I think that one was kind of low as well.
Okay. Old River Road is actually consistent with the 2045 MTP as well. So, yeah.
I have a question. The I see the 21 from so that's 30 so that's 21 from basically Port Wentworth to McCall. Is that kind of that first phase that they were talking about?
Well, the coastal
and then the intersection improvement would basically for 95 and 21 would kind of encompass the rest.
Yeah, right? Yeah. The Coastal Empire study actually has one project. It's
yeah.
State Route 21 from State Route 30 all the way to Rincon, the 9th Street in Rincon. Normally it's like, you don't, if you have a long segment and the project will be very costly.
Right.
Just for that reason, we want to like break it up so that it doesn't occupy all of the revenues. But turn out these two projects were like ranked number one and number two. So we can convert it back into one project.
No. My concern was with the intersection, was the 95 and 21 that, you know, widening 21 makes complete sense. But if you're just going to widen into that bottleneck again, and I know, that they had that improvement on there. I just, somewhere I saw that 21 and 95, like rebuilding that intersection.
Yeah. This one, I-95 interchange at State Route 21. Yeah, interchange reconstruction.
Yeah, I'm just assuming that they're kind of tied together, I would assume. Okay.
No.
I mean, not the same project.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. No. I think
that the limits would match up, that the limits of the I-95 at 21 reconstruction would match up to the limits of the 21 at State Route 30 project.
Yeah, but I think the widening project on State Route 21, it will be at the lower level. It's not grade separation. This one is like interchange. It's grade separation.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's different level. So the 21 is underneath. But this interchange will be go above.
And you know, one concern I also have is Benton Boulevard. I know some of these other projects, like Effingham Widening, there's no reason to move that up unless Benton Boulevard is addressed. And where is Benton Boulevard on this? I think they have it as Effingham Parkway South, maybe?
Benton Boulevard, it wasn't in the project selection process, but
right.
Because we use that matrix to select projects, Benton Boulevard wasn't in that. And also, there's a problem because Benton Boulevard is a local road. And then just like, Richmond Hill and Bryan County, the Harris Trail, I think the Harris Trail, that one. Yeah. What's that? Harris Trail. Yeah. Harris Trail Road. And when was the other one? Port Royal Widening. Those are like, in the function of classified roadway system, the federal, they're local roads.
Okay.
So we are mostly talking about federal dollars. So that's why, remember we talked about, we want to reclassify like Benton Boulevard. We want to reclassify Port Royal and Harris Trail to be at least collectors so that they will be eligible for federal dollars. But we're not done with that process yet.
Okay.
So, but also, I do want to mention that, if you see the balance for funding balance for cost fund 123, I don't want the funding balance to be $0. So you want to keep some money over there. So just in case, say for example, if, Harris Trail Road or Benton Boulevard get classified and you want to start, you want to have at least have some money. Reserved for that. Yeah, but we are trying to do the reclassification probably after August because so far we haven't received any like formal or not written request. I know Michelle talked about reclassified Benton Boulevard. We haven't received any form or yet. And then Thunderbolt also wants to reclassify a road around Savannah State. So then I already know that Harris Trail and Port Royal, a local. So we want to at least reclassify those to make them collectors so that they will be eligible for federal dollars. But right now, it's just, even if we add Benton Boulevard, you have to make sure that you only use local funds. So you cannot use federal dollars for now.
I got you.
Yeah. Any other project that is C that need to be moved in or moved out?
I just had a question. There's two State Route 307 grade separation projects. One's at State Route 27. The other one just references the Norfolk Southern Crossing number.
Yeah,
Where is it?
It's the south of State Route 21.
Okay.
Yeah, there are like two grade crossings right there at grade crossing.
Okay.
Yeah. I think those are from the State Route 307 corridor study and also consistent with the freight plan. I'm not sure it's consistent with Coastal Empire study, but it was selected, yeah. But we can go back and check that project selection matrix to see which one it fits into.
But yeah, I was just curious because, yeah. Like I said, she's got the Norfolk Crossing number.
Yeah, and then I will also revisit the cost estimates to make sure I use the higher number. Well, I already used the higher number, but I want to make sure that my calculations are right because if the base year was like 2016, I have to inflate it all the way to 2025 and then use the inflation factor. So I would double check those. But I will for now, I can move in President Street. What was the other one that we want to move in? Gulfstream, we want to move out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Gulfstream, we want to move out and President Street, we want to move in. What was the other one?
The Old River Road?
Oh, Old River Road. Okay. I got it. Let me just write it down. And I-95, do we want to do the I-95 widening? That one? Do we need the I-95 widening? I mean,
it's only two lanes in South Carolina. It's already really crashy when you're northbound.
Yeah. So that one is occupying most of the revenue.
Yeah.
You move it out.
Yeah, move it out.
South Carolina is working on widening their side, but it's going to be a minute.
Until that happens, it don't make no sense because then you're going to funnel everything to two lanes. So you can have five lanes and you're going to end it on two lanes.
Yeah, you still get a bottleneck. Yeah.
Yeah. It is forever. Folks are forever crashing up there because they can't figure out how to merge.
and then we can probably get more projects added in. So that's on the list. And we will see. So can the TCC just endorse the project list to the MPO board with the contingency that we will check all these and just, I mean, with the changes we already mentioned?
Somebody have any additional comments for Makoto on the 2050 MTP projects?
So moved.
Brown, second.
Right. It's been moved and seconded to endorse the project list.
Thank you.
Changes.
I know CAD project, I need to remove the last line, the para and micro bit, because Mary said it's already included. So, but I already posted when I received her email. So, but I'm going to update this, yeah, before the Columbia board meeting.
That was probably my bad. I probably added it in.
Thank you. The next one on the agenda is the TCC bylaws update. Before I do that, I do want to mention,
do we want to vote for the?
Yeah, we need to vote first. We motioned, but
yeah. We'll start at the right.
Mains, yes.
Clark, yes.
Moskowitz, yes. Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes. Kanisati, yes.
Kalanin, yes.
Senati, yes.
Thank you.
Brooks, yes.
Thank you. Yeah, remember in the financial plan, you also have the set aside. So there are a lot of revenues in the set aside. So if you do want to start a project, like if you have, US 17 widening project, US 17 like recommendations, make sure amend it into the vision plan so that you can be eligible for that operational set aside. So any other, like Effingham County or Port Wentworth, you want to pursue that funding, smaller project like roundabout or something, pursue that funding. But make sure that you're lab certified. So that's the requirement, Richmond Hill. So the same way. So it's not like that. These projects, these are big capacity projects. We have smaller projects that we can build. So if you see the map, you can probably just see this is pretty tilted to the west because of the freight concentration. But if you started to see the, like operational improvements by itself, it will be everywhere, scattered everywhere. Just want to make sure about that. Before I move on to the TCC bylaws update, I just want to mention that for the MOU, we executed the MOU in May. So far we got only 6 signatures. So we need airport. Can you just please like follow up on that? Airport, Richmond Hill, CAT, Chatham County, City of Savannah, Port Wentworth. So.
I need to double check on that. I know we received it forwarded to the city manager. I don't know if he's signing or not. I will have to follow up on that.
Okay. Yeah, for Effingham County, we received 3, and we got the news that Springfield doesn't want to join us.
I got the news the same time you did.
Okay.
And at this late in the game, I don't know if it's worthwhile to try and salvage that. Or we just figure, I don't know the process of moving on. And then they'll kind of just, address it, next census.
Okay. Well, the boundary will not change. Boundary part of Springfield will still be included in our boundary because boundary has already been approved by the governor.
Okay.
So it's just that they are not going to be a part of the process. So your rotating seat will be between Guyton and Rincon.
Okay.
The municipality.
Even better.
So just we can probably remove.
And since Effingham is the county itself is funding for the municipalities, it really shouldn't affect it at all.
It doesn't impact. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just in the MOU, we might need to like remove their signature page.
Okay.
And also remove in the first paragraph, remove Springfield.
I got you.
From that first book. Yeah. First paragraph.
Okay.
So, but the rest of you, please check with your boards to see where we are. I don't think we can make the June 30th deadline, but hopefully we will collect every signature in July. And then after we adopt the bylaws, in the June, and then we will forward everything to the governor and the GDOT, in August. So, and then in the bylaws, we will make a little bit of change. Probably, I don't think we listed Springfield. So for the TCC bylaws, actually, we talked about this several times already. So I also highlighted this, like director of transportation planning. I'm removing myself from the voting seat for the TCC because I'm basically a staff member. So I do the presentation. And then the town of Wernenberg, I don't think they have a staff member. So we removed the town of Wernenberg, a staff representative to non-voting advisory. And then Bryan County, we added in Bryan County because currently we have Richmond Hill. So Bryan County, since they're going to have a voting seat on the Corn Peel Board, so they should have a voting seat on the TCC as well. And then the other one, I just said staff represent municipality within Effingham County. So now you don't need to do like three rotations. You just need like two rotations. Yeah. Between Rincon and Guyton. And then we also moved the Coastal Regional Commission into non-voting advisory member. They used to participate when they had a new planning director who requested our bylaw amendments to add him in. But after he resigned from that agency, nobody participated. So we moved that, and we constantly actually communicate with CRC. So if we need something, we can ask them. So they have been moved to the non-voting. I also added in. I was talking to Asia about if Kayla is the chairman for the new bicycle pedestrian committee. I think I probably want to add the chairman of the new bicycle pedestrian committee still to the voting member for the TCC, and then also the new chairman transportation equity and public involvement committee into the voting. So probably need to change this over here.
So maybe it could be something like chairman or designee.
Chairman or designee, okay.
Both of that way we kind of have ourselves covered if there is duplication in terms of who that.
Yeah, it just I just think the TCC will probably hear the report from the bike path committee. So because we're going to implement a lot of bike path projects, so TCC might involve. So I still want the bike path committee to be a voting member. I will change that to the chairperson or designee and I move it back to the voting member. Besides the membership for the TCC, the other changes we had was, I talked about this one before. So we said no action items may be conducted by the TCC, unless a quorum, is present. And then, one third of all members plus one shall constitute a quorum. So depending on what our final number will be. So that is the calculation. So TCC really doesn't have that much change. All the others, like new committees, like Bike Path, Asia has already scheduled a meeting to discuss that next week. And then we already had a consolidated ACAT CAC meeting to talk about their portion of the bylaws. Those are new bylaws, but the TCC really doesn't change that much, just the membership and then some of the wording. We can make the changes. We would just ask for your endorsement for the TCC because the final approval of all the bylaw changes approved by the Corn Peel Board. So you would just endorse your portion of the bylaws.
Can we get a motion to endorse the bylaws?
So move Strickland.
Back at Moskowitz.
All right, we'll start the vote to the left.
Senati, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Canisati, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Brown, yes. Moskowitz, yes.
Clark, yes.
Maines, yes.
Brooks, yes.
Okay, thank you. And then for the other business, I do want to mention at the last meeting, we decided that we will pursue discretionary peer of funding for two studies. One is the Urban Flooding Model Phase 2. And another one is US 80 corridor study phase 2 in FM County. Oh, no. What was the other one? Bike path implementation. We decided that we want to pursue funding for those two. And then afterwards, Tim contacted me and Effingham County wants to do the US 80 corridor. So we're going to apply for three discretionary funds. I'm going to prepare the resolutions for those. for the August meeting. But I did send you the information. So do you have any updates on the scope and the cost estimates? If you do, please let me know, because the resolution need to include the final cost for the study. So I think I contacted you, right? I sent you that information. Yeah, and then I think I sent Kayla, Tim, and Anna, so the three project managers for those studies. So if you do have the cost estimates update or scope updates, please send that to me, because I'm going to prepare the grant application in July, and then resolution will be presented in August, and it will include the final cost. So that's for the other business. Thank you.
All right. Going forward into status reports, we have the non-motorized transportation plan update.
Okay, this will not be a long update. So the non-motorized transportation plan is our bike and pedestrian plan that addresses the development of our bike and pedestrian infrastructure, such as bike lanes, sidewalks, and such. And then the goal of this plan is to identify new projects, assess the needs of the community, and set new goals for bike and pedestrian infrastructure. So on to the update. Because the MPO is focused on completing the 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan, the non-motorized transportation plan will not be adopted in June 2024 as originally planned. Instead, it will be adopted at a later date. So we will begin to refocus on the non-motorized transportation plan after the adoption of the 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan update in August. And this is because the 2050 MTP is a required MPO document, meaning it takes precedence over the non-motorized transportation plan, which is not a required MPO document. So once we finish that 2050 MTP, which is required, we'll jump back into the non-motorized transportation plan. And that's the end of that update.
Thank you so much, Asia. Up next, we have the congestion management process update.
Okay, I do want to mention FHWA wants to make sure that the non-motorized transportation plan and congestion management process do feed into the 2050 MTP. So the reason we are not going to have the non-motorized plan adopted before the 2050 plan is because we haven't finished the prioritization process yet, but we have already selected, we have already identified more than 400 bike path projects. So we can do the prioritization just like we did for the 2050, but we need a project sponsor. So when you have a project sponsor, it takes precedence, it suddenly becomes a priority. So, but those projects, if any of you wants to pursue a project, you can select it from the project list in non-motorized transportation plan. So it still fits into the 2050 MTP. And the same for the CMP, the congestion management process. We talked about this several times. And this is the final report that Genesis sent us. And then this report actually incorporated the comments from Federal Highway Administration. So when we do the 30-day, we want to do the 30-day public review period for the 2050 MTP starting on July 1st. So this will be part of that as well. So we just want to make, and then the final resolution, we will see the 2050 MTP already considered CMP recommendations and non-motorized recommendations. So this is the final report that Genesis provided. So all the figures and everything has been corrected. So if you're interested, and it's a very comprehensive document. So just want to let you know it is basically it's done. It just needs to be adopted in as part of the 2050 MTP.
Okay. Thank you, Akota. Are there any questions on the CMP or that process? All right, next we've got the project status update for State Route 25 US 17 corridor study.
Do you have a Rhodes or Chris online? Rhodes or Chris? Rhodes Hunt or Chris Messenger?
Hey, Wakoda, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Do you want to take over the screen or do you want me to scroll down?
If you could let us take over, that would be great.
Okay. Roger, can you let him take over? Okay.
So I'm trying to share Wycota. I got the notification. Let's see.
Our screen still doesn't show your screen yet.
Are y'all able to see anything yet?
No.
Okay.
I see arrows.
Okay.
Minimize my screen. Oh, okay. Now we see it.
Great. We should have Chris online with us too.
Yeah, can you hear me now, Rhodes?
I gotcha.
Okay, gotcha. I could not unmute for a minute there. Sorry for the delay. So I'll kick us off. First of all, good afternoon, everyone. We appreciate this opportunity to present our status to the TCC. This is another exciting opportunity for us to study a very important corridor in the county, and to work with Chatham County and the Core MPO in doing so. So first, I think we want to introduce the team a little bit. Rhodes, if you'll move forward. There you go. I'm Chris Marsingill. I'm the project manager on the project. And as Wycota mentioned, Rhodes Hunt is also on the call, and he's going to be helping with the presentation. And like some of the other corridors that we've worked on for the county and for the MPO, Denise Grabowski is leading our stakeholder engagement on the project. And we want to talk a little bit about that stakeholder engagement as part of this presentation to you today. So real quick, in the way of an agenda, and we're going to try to be through this in 15 minutes or less, but we want to talk a little bit about the study goals, the purpose of the meeting, and an overview of the corridor. We're going to talk about some of the initial research that we've done. And as part of that initial research, obviously we've developed some idea for improvements that we want to make. And then we want to talk about where we're going next. So first of all, let's revisit the study goals. The project or the study is intended to identify and prioritize improvements for the State Route 25 at US 17 corridor. There's been a lot of discussion today about identifying projects, prioritizing those, and then getting them programmed. So this study should help to inform that process on other projects that are along this specific corridor. And those will be programmed through the MTP process and ultimately become part of the TIP and the MTP. So key objectives of the MTP that we're focusing on as we move through the study process are to make improvements on the facility in terms of safety, of course, mobility and accessibility are key components. And we always have to keep that focus of moving both freight and people, and not just freight, not just automobiles, through the corridor. We certainly want to lower the frequency of crashes, and that's part of the information that we're going to present today is to talk about where some of those higher crash areas are. We've collected lots of data on volumes of cars and trucks and cyclists and pedestrians throughout the corridor. We want to talk a little bit about that information today without getting too deep. Another focus of the MTP is to improve emergency vehicle response, emergency response time overall, and then also improve the evacuation routes. And in general, to reduce congestion. And the last part of this is key, the travel time reliability. We often choose corridors based on reliability as opposed to just the amount of time or the length of travel on that corridor. So travel time reliability is very important. As an example, with ongoing construction on I-16, sounds bad, but travel time reliability is not great on I-16 right now. So folks might be choosing other routes because they know, although it may take a little longer or maybe a little longer in length or trip distance, that it's reliable. So that's kind of key there. Go ahead, Rhodes. So today we're going to review the existing conditions a little bit, and then we'd like some input from you all regarding any other problem areas that we've not identified or discussed, and if there's potential solutions that you guys envision that that would be helpful as we move forward with identifying alternatives and testing those alternatives. In the way of a quick quarter overview, the project itself, or the study project, is 10.7 miles long. It's a fairly significant length. There are 40 intersections that we're studying. Of those, 16 are signalized today. And there are 244 unsignalized driveways along the corridor. So the important part of those numbers is it's a lot. It's a big corridor. There's a lot of intersections to look at and to consider. So to try to break this down into more bite-size pieces, we divided the corridor into six segments, and they are identified on this map. And we basically define these segments based on the characteristics of the roadway through these sections, be that the type of development along the corridor, what type of traffic that segment is serving, or what the typical section is. So real quick, we have the segment one from the Chatham County, Bryan County line to Chavez Road. We're calling that the Southern Gateway. Segment two picks up from around Chavez, and we're calling that the Commercial South, and that moves through the 204 interchange and then Little Neck. And then the next section is the Berwick segment. I don't think that needs much explanation. And then after the Berwick segment, we have the Silk Hope segment, which ties to the Commercial North and ultimately the Northern Gateway. So the project, as you can see, extends from the Bryan-Chatham County line up to roughly 516. So before Rhodes talks a little bit about the details, I wanted to give you some things that we think about as we're diving into a study and defining existing conditions. And I hope these are the kind of things that you're thinking about as well. Along the corridor, where's the traffic the heaviest? And within that heavy area, where are we seeing the most trucks? So where do we need to focus our design for trucks in the corridor? Where are the bad intersections? We've worked on a number of intersections through the corridor in the past, and the county's had a number of projects along the corridor. So some have been improved, and there's some others that aren't performing as well. So we need to be focused on where those are as we're defining potential solutions along the corridor. The next one's a big one. Where are the most crashes? And what's contributing to those crashes? Where is the greatest growth potential along the corridor? And finally, is the corridor a freight corridor, or is it a commuter corridor, or is it both? So these are key questions that we go into the study with in mind, and then endeavor to answer some of these as we're defining our existing conditions. Rhodes?
So thank you, Chris. So we'll start off with a little bit of discussion on the daily traffic volumes. And just to clarify, we have grouped the volumes shown on the screen here in the same six segments that Chris just introduced. So starting in segment one at the southern end of the corridor, we have volumes of about 33,000 vehicles per day for VPD. And that does tick up a little bit in segment two as we head towards the 204 interchange of about 34,000 VPD. Segment three, again, the Berwick segment has the highest volumes on the corridor, about 34,500. An interesting piece about segment three as well is it also has the highest growth rate. Over the last 5 years, segment three has an average annual growth rate of about 4%, which is very strong. So that's an important piece that we'll keep in mind as we move forward as well. Once you get into segments four, five, and six, we start to see the volumes taper off a little bit. Segment six, right near the 516 interchange, has the lowest on the corridor of about 27,000 VPD. And an interesting part about segment six is it actually has a negative growth rate, meaning that traffic is actually declining on an annual basis. And that's not something that we traditionally see here in the Savannah area. So I thought that was unique about segment six. So as we all know, not all traffic is created equal. And particularly in Savannah, there's lots of trucks. So we've identified heavy truck percentages by segment. Generally, the percentages are pretty consistent across the board amongst all six segments. Segment two has the lowest truck percentage of about 5%. A couple have about 7% in segments three and six. What's interesting about this corridor is these truck percentages trend lower than some of the recent corridors that we've studied recently, like US 80, like Dean Forest Road. We commonly saw truck percentages in the double digits and sometimes as high as 20% in parts of those corridors. So what this communicates to us is that State Route 25, while still serving freight, is primarily a commuter and commercial corridor. So part of our analysis with the traffic is we observed the operational performance at all 40 intersections, like Chris talked about. And in addition, we observed some queuing and congestion. We actually conducted 2 days worth of field observations back in January of this year after schools had returned from the holidays, which is a key component of observations. And so what I want to point out is the queuing that we observed is shown by the thick red lines shown on this graphic. And there are a couple of key observations within that. As most of y'all are aware, I'm sure, the queuing on State Route 204 in the eastbound direction in the mornings is quite extensive. It begins typically at the traffic signal at Don Zipperer Drive and then extends back to the west for over a mile and then spills back onto northbound State Route 25 at the 204 interchange. So we're well aware of this issue, and we are coordinating our findings with the current State Route 204 study team just to make sure that our recommendations and findings do align. Some other key observations in the morning at Cottonvale Road, again in the Berwick segment, those queues extend about a mile and a half through Berwick and all the way back to Quaco and contribute to some pretty slow travel times through that segment in the morning. And then at both Chatham Parkway and at 516, queues, again, the northbound direction as folks head towards Savannah are about half a mile at both of those locations. So here's a picture of the queuing at Cottonvale, again, in the Berwick segment. And this picture is facing south. So you can see, again, some pretty heavy congestion well past the Berwick Boulevard intersection on to Quaco Road, as I mentioned. And then moving on to the PM peak, generally it's an inverse of the morning in that folks are traveling from Savannah south towards the residential destinations at Berwick and in Bryan County, even further south. So a couple notable observations in the PM. There is still a little bit of queuing at the 204 interchange shown by the number two there in this picture on the westbound off-ramp. In the Berwick segment, queues beginning at Berwick Boulevard typically extend about a mile in length all the way back to Cottonvale. And then a notable observation, I think, is at Chatham Parkway. Honestly, the queuing is bad in all four directions. On all four intersection approaches, queuing is about half a mile in length. And in particular, on the westbound approach, you can see that red line extending all the way to the Veterans Parkway interchange approaching Chatham Parkway. And speaking of that, this is a picture on the screen here of that queuing. So this picture is facing to the east at Chatham Parkway, and you can see the queuing in the afternoons extending basically all the way back into the back of this picture where the Veterans Parkway overpass is located. So another key piece of our traffic analysis, and as I mentioned before, the corridor really is primarily a commuter and commercial route, which is really reflective of the existing land uses adjacent to the corridor. And over the course of the last several months, we've coordinated pretty extensively with MPC staff to develop this map here that you see on the screen. And this map is reflective of both existing land uses, but also some key approved future land uses from planned urban developments or PUDs, as well as some other major residential developments that are soon to come. One of those is the Hopeton Landing PUD, which is located off of the Little Neck Road corridor and is primarily a residential development as shown by the yellow color. Generally speaking, within a 1 mile radius of the corridor, the adjacent land uses are approximately 75% either residential in yellow, commercial in red, or green space, obviously in green. And when I say green space, that typically means, you know, wetlands or floodplain areas, such as the area near the Ogeechee River on the southern end of the corridor. And these areas may serve to either restrict or consolidate redevelopment in some of the areas like the 204 interchange or the Berwick area, where there is a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit of undeveloped land still left. And so these are key data points for us to help understand both evolving traffic patterns as well as to be able to forecast future traffic during the later parts of the study. So I want to talk quickly about crashes. Typically, when we evaluate crash history, we do so by evaluating the most recent 5-year period. And so in this case, we were able to analyze from 2018 to 2022. During this 5-year period, there were about 3,600 crashes reported along the 10.7-mile stretch. Fortunately, and good news, most of them are minor in terms of severity. They are classified as property damage only, or PDO, which means that there were no injuries reported. So again, that's a good thing. However, there were 24 fatal crashes that were reported, and 13 of those involved either a pedestrian or a bicyclist, and most of those occurred during dark conditions. So what this actually represents is a fatal crash rate of triple the statewide average. So again, a key safety data point for us to consider. Additionally, 5 of the 6 segments that we've identified have a crash rate that exceeds the statewide average. And as a whole, the State Route 25 corridor has a crash rate of approximately double the statewide average. So really a pretty clear safety deficiency from these 2 data points. And when annualized using some data from the Federal Highway Administration, this represents a cost of about $170 million per year. And so all these data points, again, just communicate to us that there is a clear need for safety improvements and enhancements along this corridor. And that's something that we will continue to evaluate very closely as we look into alternatives. So speaking of bikes and peds, just want to give a couple quick data points on those users. Parts of the corridor do comprise pieces of the Georgia State Bike Route 95, which is the coastal bike route, as well as the East Coast Greenway. But despite that, there is a lot of variability in the roadway typical sections and a lot of inconsistency, and particularly north of State Route 307. There are no bike lanes or bike facilities, for that matter, currently provided. So we know there's a lot of latent demand, but really the typical sections and lack of facilities in some locations do tend to discourage that type of use. So one of our objectives moving forward will really be to identify areas where there are gaps in both sidewalks and bicycle facilities, and really target improvements to those to help improve continuity. And these facilities really do serve to provide greater connectivity to some existing recreational and commercial facilities. Obviously, there are a lot of both of those on the corridor, but also really to help enhance safety and just generally provide a higher quality of life that we all strive for here in Savannah. As a point of comparison, we have studied the non-motorized transportation plan that's been talked about a little bit already today, and really wanted to see what type of improvements were recommended in that plan, specifically in the areas on the corridor where there are on-street bike lanes today. The plan does recommend additional sidewalks between Bradley Boulevard and State Route 204, between Bridgewater Drive and Quaco Road, and between Berwick Boulevard and Dean Forest Road. And then finally, like I mentioned earlier, north of Dean Forest Road, there are no bicycle facilities present today. And so the non-motorized plan does recommend a shared use facility to accommodate both bicycles and pedestrians from Salt Creek Road to the 516 interchange. And so I'll close briefly with the discussion on transit. Hopefully y'all can see the CAT map here on the screen. For most of the study corridor, CAT does operate bus route 17, which begins at Canebrake Road south of 204, and that route travels most of the rest of the corridor all the way past 516 into Savannah. And then for a brief stretch, bus route 25 also overlaps between Chatham Parkway and Gamble Road. And in total, there are approximately 41 transit stops. But interestingly, some of the research that we've done suggests that approximately 1%, so only 1% of all trips on State Route 25 do utilize transit. So an interesting key data point there. Here are some pictures of some of the existing stops. The first is at Cottonvale Road, and you can see that's part of Bus Route 17. And then near Chatham Parkway, that's the area I mentioned before where Route 17 and 25 do overlap. But you'll notice these two stops have shelters. Most of the stops don't. And neither of these ones pictured here have really much sidewalk connectivity to and from. And most of the stops don't have areas for buses to pull off. So we think that the corridor could benefit from some transit improvements and enhancements to really help accessibility with the goal of increasing ridership to help lessen some of the traditional motorist demand on the corridor. So with that, I will turn it back over to Chris to take us home.
Thank you, Rhodes. So there are a lot of needs along the project, as Rhodes pointed out. Some of those are short term, and this project is aimed at, or the study is aimed at identifying both short term project and long term projects. You can think of the short term improvements in terms of between now and 5 years out, and they're more reactive in nature to the than the long term projects. So some of those include capacity and safety improvements, and aimed at improving some of the bottlenecks along the corridor. Rhodes finished up there with a discussion of transit. There are also a number of pedestrian needs and bicycle needs along the corridor. Those may be not as immediate as the capacity and safety needs. And then in the long-term box, some of the access management strategies that should be considered along the corridor include things such as restricting movements from specific driveways or intersections, maybe the introduction of medians. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. As traffic continues to grow along the corridor, we will likely have to restrict some of the movements to minimize conflicts, to improve throughput, and to improve safety. I think the big kahuna along the corridor is the interchange with State Route 204, which would certainly go into the long-term category. So Rhodes has switched to some of the potential improvements there. I'm not going to read all of these to you, but they are grouped into capacity, alternative mobility investment, and access control categories. Specifically related to the interchange, we have identified some preliminary alternatives that we will be studying as we move into the projections and the analysis portion of the project or the study. Two in particular that we'll be testing are a parclo, which is a partial cloverleaf, and then also a DDI configuration that we would like to test to see how they perform. The parklo would have loops in the southeast and northwest quadrants, so essentially the same configuration as the State Route 204 interchange at King George Boulevard, with the intent of keeping the heavy movements moving such that you don't have to stop traffic as long on the three roadways. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about next steps. We will be meeting next with the stakeholder committee to talk through our existing conditions and findings. We will present to them much of the same information that we presented to the TCC, and we will seek input from them on other areas that we need to focus on the corridor if we've missed something. And also, we will be asking for any foresight that the stakeholders may have in potential solutions along the corridor. The next step will be traffic forecasting, where we will project our traffic into the future in order to use that information to test our solutions, specifically the long-term solutions. And then we'll develop the alternatives or concepts, if you will, and test those with the traffic forecast. We'll then move into a public information phase, Like the other studies that we've done, we want to take our alternatives to the public before we finalize those in a report format. We certainly want input from the public as we do from the TCC and the stakeholders. And then following that public information meeting, we'll meet with the stakeholders a final time to talk through the alternatives that we identified, and then we'll also present to them the results of the public information open house. Following final input from the stakeholders, we'll compile a final report, and that should bring us to the conclusion of the project. And that also brings us to the conclusion of the status update. So if there are any questions, we're happy to entertain those.
Does anyone have any questions on the State Route 25 project?
Yeah, this is Mary Moskowitz with Chatham Area Transit. I know you mentioned the fixed route system that is on US 17. We're also doing a micro transit zone in that area. And so one of the things to keep in mind when looking at the transit improvements is transferring. So the idea with the micro transit is it's supposed to enhance the first and last mile connectivity to the fixed route. Right now we have designated that area as an unsafe zone for drop-offs for the micro transit vehicle. It's just a van, so it doesn't make sense for that to stop in the middle of the road to drop off and pick up people. But if we could have transit improvements that address a safe transfer from a micro transit vehicle to a fixed route vehicle, that would help enhance the goal of that program.
Thank you, Mary. We'll definitely keep that in mind.
All right, anything else? Thank you so much, Chris and Rhodes, for the presentation on the project. We appreciate it.
Thank you for your time and attention.
Yep, thank y'all. Appreciate you guys.
Hello. I was just unmuted, but I cannot hear anything online. Just letting you know.
Can you hear me?
I can hear Katie, I think.
Hey, Katie. I can't see the screen anymore. Something happened.
Yeah, I think there's some audio issues. I'm just going to mute myself and see if it gets fixed.
Okay, I can see my report now. Can anyone hear me?
Katie, I can hear you online. I think maybe they hear us. They want you to just go ahead.
Oh, okay. So 19-19, 404 Spur at Talmadge Memorial Bridge Maintenance. Reconstruction activities are underway and working on schedules, design, and analysis. Number two is 15-151, safety improvements on State Route 204 from State Route 21 to Rio Road. PFPR is anticipated in September. Number three is 15-675, safety improvements on I-16 at Chatham Parkway. We're still holding for layup schedule for January 25. Four and five are the twin projects, 15-704 and 15-705, bridge replacements over Back River and widening on State Route 404 Spur from northeast of Savannah Harbor to Back River, working on PIOH and PFPR, both anticipated at the end of the summer. Six and seven, Spore River and Lazaretto bridge replacements, working toward PFPR. And number eight is the roundabout State Route 30 at Hodgeville Road, continues in preliminary design. A PCRF is being processed for right-of-way authorization and let. For the active projects, lines 1 through 4 are innovative delivery projects. Number 1, 12757 is 74% complete. 13727, I-16 DDI is 98% complete. Wrapping up work on concrete islands, signals, lighting, signage, and strapping. Lines 3 and 4, Port Wentworth replacements. Bridge replacements are reporting at 55%. Line 5 is 7128 Islands Expressway. It's still reporting at 68%, but work is progressing. The formula requirement variables have not all been met, so it's causing calculation errors, but the work is progressing. Line 6 is 6328. Construction of Brampton Road Connector is at 72%. Line 7 is widening of Ogeechee Road from I-516 to Victory Drive. It's 14%. Line 8 is Effingham Parkway at 52%. We've received the plan revisions for two of those three roundabouts, and the third is expected by the end of the summer. And if there's any questions, I can't hear anyone, so you can send me an email or a chat, and I'll get back with you.
about 25% complete. As of this afternoon, the detour is between Waters and Cedar. They're working on stormwater installation and are continuing to doing concrete and grading. Truman Trail Phase 2B, we've awarded construction, and the groundbreaking is scheduled for July 1st at Costa Rica and 58th. If anybody wants to go to that, it's at 9:30 in the morning. Then Middle Ground Road, so they did get a high-scoring proposer and are anticipating a notice to proceed in August or September. And the I-16 ramp removal, an MOA between the city and GDOT was approved by City Council on December 7th last year, and they are working on moving forward with the IMR.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Any questions for her?
I have a question. I have some friends who's complaining about the flooding, street flooding on 51st Street. Who should I contact? They will ask me who to contact.
That would be our stormwater department.
Stormwater department. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Up next, we've got the Savannah Hilton Head International Airport.
Yeah, the airport has two projects currently under construction. We have five more that are going to be started in the next couple of months. The two that are active construction right now, the security checkpoint expansion project, we're expanding our security checkout lanes from 3 to 6. And that's estimated to be complete in December of this year. And our fuel storage facility is being upgraded by 120,000 gallons. And we have delivery of the tanks in August of this year with substantial completion in February of 25.
Okay. Thank you so much. Any questions for the airport? All right. We will – up next, we've got Chatham Area Transit.
So you see most of our projects are getting completed, which is good. And our next meeting, I'll have some updates based on the budget. So some new projects will be rolling on. One of the updates on the ferry boat maintenance facility, we did just receive our final site development permit from the City of Savannah. So that project is still moving forward. So
that's it. Thank you so much, Mary. All right. Seeing no questions for Kat. Up next, we've got the LATS SCDOT project status update report.
Yeah, LATS provided this report. Stephanie is not online, but she did provide this report. It's attached to the agenda.
Thank you. And then we've got our TIP funding tracking report.
That one's still a working
progress. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry, it's probably my fault for the late delivery on that one. All right. Are there anything else on the agenda for today?
I know that the City of Savannah is applying for a TIP grant, and we provided the letter of support. I think that's for the Heritage Trail, right? Yeah,
that may have been through the CIP division.
Yeah, I think Joe Shiraz was the one. So we did provide a letter of support for that, a TIP grant funding.
Okay.
So, yeah. Normally I add in the notices for the grant opportunities, but I haven't got a chance to, add that yet. Okay.
Awesome. All right. Well, seeing that is all, thank you so much for joining us today. And I think up next it'll be the MPO meeting.
Yeah.
All right. Thank y'all.
Okay. Thank you.